All right, let's get started again. We come to chapter 17, and we're going to try and cover chapter 17 and 18 to finish up here. Chapter 18 is rather lengthy, but I'm not going to kill you with it. We talk about the great harlot here. In verse 17, it says, "And there came one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls and talked with me, saying unto me, Come here, I will show unto thee the judgment of the great harlot that sitteth upon many waters." So the angel's inviting John, saying, "I've got to show you something. There's something very special I want you to see as a part of this judgment that's going on." So what do we learn about this? First of all, we learn something about her punishment. And it says, it calls it there, the judgment of the harlot. Okay, so I think I've got, I gave that to you, right? All right, so then there is her picture. So the judgment is a legal verdict, condemnation, but notice her picture. It's going to be finally carried out here. What is her picture? It's three things that I want you to notice about this picture of her. First of all, she is called a harlot. Judgment of the harlot. You all know what a harlot is. The Greek word from the dictionary, the biblical dictionary of biblical languages, Leonidas, says that a harlot is a whore, a woman who practices sexual immorality as a profession, a prostitute. This seems to be the ultimate expression of wickedness, and we find it many times throughout Scripture. So she is pictured as a harlot. She is secondly pictured as a great harlot, not just any old harlot, but the greatest of all, perhaps. The ultimate evil prostitute that sold her soul for temporal pleasure and wickedness, sharing riches and glory presently, she sold her soul for that. So this picture is designed to give identification. Mount says in the Old Testament, prophetic discourse, the imagery of the harlot is commonly used to denote religious apostasy. It's used of Israel, calling her a harlot at times. The New Testament, the church is warned, viewed as a virgin to be married to Christ, and warning us not to worship other gods. It's spiritual adultery, James 4:4. What know you not that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whosoever therefore be the friend of the world is the enemy of God. Ye adulterers and adulteresses, he says. So, Wolverd says the picture of the woman is utterly evil and signifies spiritual adultery, portraying those who outwardly and religiously seem to be joined to the true God, but who are untrue to this relationship. The symbolism of spiritual adultery is not ordinarily used of heathen nations who do not know God, but always of people who outwardly carry the name of God while worshiping and serving other gods. So this harlot is a harlot, a great harlot, but is also considered religious or ecclesiastical Babylon. Now write that down and I'll explain what I'm talking about, because that can be very confusing to a lot of people. Have no clue, what are you talking about here? It appears that this harlot is a religious entity or organization. She is a spiritual or an ecclesiastical force. Ecclesiastical referring to a church or a church-like organization. She is religious or ecclesiastical Babylon. She is all the apostate religious systems fused together into a world church. Now, many of you are aware that there are a lot of churches out there today that do not teach the Bible. They do not exalt the Lord Jesus Christ. They have the name of religion and the name of God and the name of Christ, but that's just a word. It is not in reality. And so you go to some churches and you're not serving and worshiping and learning about the true God, because the devil has learned how to master the art of deception. And he realizes there are some people that would really want to serve the true God, but if he can deceive them into following a false God or to go a different direction, he will do that. So what does this woman do in this role? Well, we see her position. We see her controlling the masses in verse 1 when it says she sits upon many waters in verse 1. She sits upon many waters. Now, how do you sit upon many waters? That's kind of an interesting description. Is she in a ship? No, this phrase will be explained to us later on in verse 15, where it tells us, and he saith unto me in verse 15, the waters which thou sawest, in verse 1, where the harlot sits, are peoples and multitudes and nations and tongues. So the Bible, it interprets itself here. He says, I'll tell you what that picture is. This woman is sitting on these waters. Those waters represent people, the masses of humanity, the world. And this woman is controlling them. She's dominating control of the masses of humanity worldwide. That's why some people see that this great harlot, they see it as the Roman Catholic Church, because they see that she controls a lot of the masses of humanity around the planet. Well, it may be, but it could also possibly be someone else we don't know. What else does she do? She influences the beast. Now, we already saw who the beast was last night. The beast is not only the Antichrist, but also the whole system of the Antichrist, the kingdom of this world, his kingdom. And we see in verse 2, it says, with whom the woman, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth have been made drunk with the wine of her fornication. Verse 3, so he carried me away in the spirit into the wilderness, and I saw a woman sit upon a scarlet colored beast, full of the names of blasphemy, having seven heads and ten horns. So this beast is there, and this woman is sitting not only on many waters, controlling and influencing them, but also sitting on top of this beast. Now, when you sit on top of an animal, that gives you a clue that you're in some way pulling the reins and controlling that animal. And so in some concept, we see that this woman is ecclesiastical Babylon, is somehow influencing the beast. Now, I'm not sure if I put some notes in there. I think I did there. She is sitting on that seven-headed beast. Since she is depicted as sitting on the beast, it would seem that her dominating power has significant influence over this beast. Of course, this beast is not a tamed pony or even a well-broken stallion. It's a wild and dangerous beast. What is the beast? It's the dragon. It is the devil-inspired and devil-indwelt beast. This harlot may think that she is controlling and influencing this wild beast, but when the beast wants to do his own thing, he will disregard any attempts by this harlot to be controlled. The evil dragon cannot be tamed or trained. Okay, so you just picture not somebody riding a big horse stallion, but somebody riding, maybe they ride elephants over in the Middle East and so on. And imagine this wild animal, this elephant, all of a sudden decides it doesn't like the person that is on its back. You think that elephant, if wants to, it can go crazy. But this is a huge beast, larger than an elephant. Leviathan is described for us in the book of Job, and this probably is larger than the whales themselves, the blue whales. This is huge Leviathan. And she's on that beast and trying to pull the strings, and the beast kind of says, okay, which way you want to go? Until the beast is ready to do his thing. Nobody can control the devil except God. So let's look at her partners now. Who are her partners? Verses 2 and 3 tell us, first of all, world leaders. Verse 2, with whom the kings of the earth have committed fornication, and the inhabitants of the earth. So the leaders and Antichrist are her partners. She is probably developing political organization complete with ambassadors and negotiating government details. Another reason why some people think it's the Catholic Church, because like in America today, every president of the United States since Ronald Reagan has appointed an ambassador to the Vatican. Why do you appoint an ambassador to anyone, to any place? Because they have political power and political influence. And you want to make sure that you have connections and you know how to pull strings with them. And so that's the ambassador issue. And so this world church organization, whatever it is, whether it's the Catholic Church or something else, is pulling strings and hobnobbing with the leaders and the rulers of the world, and either controlling and making it a church state or a state-controlled church. One way or another, she is vitally involved in that, and those are her partners. And the Antichrist, she is riding on that beast. So the beast and her are working together in this program of evil. Notice her prominence in verse 4 and 5. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet color and bedecked with gold and precious stones and pearls, having a golden cup in her hand. And so she is, there's exterior eminence. She just looks she's decked out with beautiful adornment and pleasant to observe and very attractive. People see these churches, you know, the richest church in the world I visited, it's in Brazil, and it was almost completely made of gold. And it's owned by the Vatican. And so everything is beautiful and ornate, and some of the most beautiful churches in the world, you can go and visit them if you pay a little money, and then they get richer, and there you go. And she is holding out a golden cup. And there is, however, elegant evil. That's what it is. It's elegance, but it is evil elegance. At the end of verse 4, in that golden cup in her hand is full of abominations and filthiness of her fornication. Notice her perversity as described also in verses 5 and 6. It's seen in her designations. Notice the names that are given to her in verse 5. And upon her forehead was the name written, Mystery Babylon the Great, the mother of harlots and abominations of the earth. Boy, those are not kind of names I'd like to be found on my tombstone or on my resume. You're the, you know, Babylon. I don't want to be caught with Babylon. And the mother of harlots, abominations of the earth, those are not flattering titles. But it's not only seen in her designations, also seen in her deeds. In verse 6, it says, and I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints and with the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And when I saw her, I wondered with great wonder. Great persecutions, drunk with the blood of saints. That's horrible. If you read back in history and some of those places into the Spanish Inquisition, that Spanish Inquisition, it was run by the Roman Catholic Church. It was run by a church, and they were persecuting and killing people, beheading them, if they didn't hold to the doctrines of the church. And they were also, later on, executing a lot of Baptists and people that baptized by immersion just because they didn't accept their teaching of baptismal regeneration. So that's why a lot of people think that it has to do with the Catholic Church. It could be. I don't know. God does. The mystery of Babylon, I think I gave you a chart there. You've got it there. And I don't think I put that in my PowerPoint. So you've got that. You can just look at that. I did put it in there. How about that? Jerusalem, it's you see God's plan and Satan's counterfeit. Jerusalem is versus Babylon. The wife of Jehovah is the bride of Christ, and the mother of harlots is the devil's woman. God's plan is that we be pure and holy, but this woman is the abominations of the earth, the messengers of eternal life, but they are the murderers of God's people. God's plan is to have ambassadors of peace, but they make war against the Lamb. God's plan is finally to be spiritually oriented, but they are politically oriented. Which leads us then to this mystery of the seven-headed beast, the riddle of the seven-headed beast. All right, let me start out by giving you a riddle. You like riddles? What's black and white and red all over?
Sunburned zebras.
How many of you agree with him? How many of you think it's a newspaper? All right, that's the one I always heard there. Here's another riddle. What has seven heads, 10 horns, carries a beautiful woman on its back, and was and is not, and yet is? What is it? The beast. You're right. She wins the prize, okay? But that's what this whole next section deals with. It's explaining to us the mystery. It gives us the riddle, and then it's going to tell us. And the word mystery is given in here. And there's several words in different in the Greek language. I'm not going to take time to give you a Greek lesson here, but they give these different concepts of this is the mystery. It's a riddle. It is something that we need clues for. All right? So, here's something you need to consider. The prophecy, prophetic prophecy has always been a riddle to man. In the Old Testament, those authors, those prophets, they wrote, but they did not understand what they were writing, many of them. The two men who were the recipients of the most detailed prophetic prophecy in all of Scripture are Daniel and, here in Revelation, John. And both of them expressed their lack of understanding. So when we start talking about prophecy, don't feel stupid. The greatest men that were recipients of this prophecy, they got them. And Daniel said, for example, he said at the conclusion of his book, "And I heard, but I understood not. I heard, but I didn't understand what I was hearing." And some of you may feel that, you know, we're going through this and I'm listening, I'm trying to hear it, but I don't understand it all. You're okay. Don't feel stupid. You can learn and understand the most important things that you need to know. Here in Revelation 17, 6, John, chapter 17, verse 6, John gawks at what he's seeing here with amazement and wonder at what does this all mean. Look at the last verse, part of 7. He says, "And I saw her, and I wondered with great wonder." I just, what is this? What does this mean? Help me understand this. And so the angel begins to explain in verse 7, "And the angel said unto me, Why didst thou wonder? I will tell thee the mystery of the woman and of the beast that carries her, which hath the 7 heads and 10 horns. I'll tell you what it is. Just listen carefully now. The beast that thou sawest was and is not and shall ascend out of the bottomless pit and go into perdition, and they that dwell on the earth shall wonder whose names were not written in the book of life from the foundation of the world when they behold the beast that was and is not and yet is." Now notice verse 9. It's interesting. He says, "And here is the mind." Here is the mind which has wisdom. Don't you want to have a mind like that? A mind that has wisdom? I want to understand. Here is the mind that has wisdom, and he's going to give us an explanation now. The 7 heads are 7 mountains on which the woman sits. Everybody got it now? You all know what it is, right? You feel like you're smart now? You say, "Well, wait, what is this 7 heads, these 7 mountains? What are you talking about?" All right, let's get on to it. The riddle explained here. And we got 10 minutes to do it. The distinction. It's the mystery of the woman, and it's the mystery of the beast. We gave you a slip of paper. I think some of you got those before. How many mysteries there are in the Bible? I think there's 14 or 15 or something like that. And so the mystery of the woman is she's a harlot in verse 10. And in verses 1 and 15, she sits on the many waters, which are the people, and she's carried by the beast in verses 3 and 7 and 9. The mystery of the beast, okay? Mystery of the beast, she carries the woman. She comes from the abyss. She is scheduled for destruction. She's going into perdition. And then as has a history as well as a future, but has a temporary time out. She is not right now. She was, but she is not, and then she will be again. So this will be very mysterious to unbelievers. They that dwell on the earth shall wonder, it says in verse 8. They will wonder, and they won't figure it out. That kind of gives us a clue that they're not going to be able to figure out the nature, the true nature, and the purpose of this beast. People are going to be clueless. And I talk about the end times today to people that don't know the Bible, and they are clueless. They have no clue. They see the times and things shaping up. They see governments jostling, and they see what's going on, but they don't know what's going on. They don't have a clue. But we can know if we pay close attention here. So there's a difficulty. And here's the difficulty. And it's found in verse 9. That first phrase, and some of you have different translations. I'm going to read for you different translations here so you can understand how this gets translated differently. And verse 9, the first part says, "And here is the mind which has wisdom." That's the King James Version I teach from. The RSV, the ESV, the NIV all say it this way: "This calls for a mind with wisdom." The Phillips translation: "Here we need a mind with understanding." The New English Bible says, "But here is the clue for those who can interpret it." Beck's translation says, "Here is something for an intelligent person to think about." The New American Standard Version, which is a very good translation usually, says, "Here is the mind which has wisdom." Robert Mount simply says, "John is saying that although the interpretation of the seven heads is not obvious, it may be understood by those who ponder the riddle with care and wisdom." So if you study carefully, you may be able to get this figured out, I think is what he's saying. I just put that there. Did I give you that in your notes? You got it. Good. Let's go on. So the beast in verses 9 through 14 is compared to seven heads with seven mountains and seven kings. That's the comparison. There is comprehensive here. From John's perspective, some of you got to say, well, what is this? How does this work? From John's perspective, there were seven kingdoms. He says in verse 10, "And there are seven kings, five are fallen, one is, and the other is not yet come. And when he comes, he must continue a short space." So there's seven kings, he says. Five are already gone. One is presently, and one is going to come in the future. And when he comes, he's not going to be around very long. Okay? So the one that he's talking about, I'm going to just give it to you here, is Rome. Five are fallen, one is Rome, and one is yet to come. That'll be revived Rome. Now, I don't have time to give a whole lot here, but I'm going to give you this little chart here. Seven world kingdoms from 17:10, Revelation. John's view, seven kings, there are seven world kingdoms total, he says. There's seven kings and seven kingdoms. What are those seven kingdoms in total? If you look back in history, everybody can know these. They're pretty clear. Five are fallen, John says. That's history from John's day. All right? So here's the first one. It was Egypt from 1900 BC to Assyria. Then Assyria came on in Babylon, the Medes and Persians. Then there was Greece. And then along came the Romans. The five that were before Christ and before John were the Egypts, Assyrian, Babylon, Medes and Persians, and Greece. The Bible all defines those and details those in the book of Daniel as well. Then we've got one that is present, John said. Who was in power in John's day? It was Rome. So from 146 BC to roughly 400 years later, the Roman Empire was in power. But since Rome was destroyed, there has not been a worldwide kingdom since that day. And so then the final one is one is yet to come, and the book of Daniel points out to us there's going to be another kingdom that's going to come. And that kingdom will be revived Rome And he's only going to be there for a while. Guess how long he's going to be? 7 years. That's not long compared to all these other kingdoms. Okay? Now, there's a number of people that have tried to control the world. Napoleon, Stalin, and so on, but they failed. But this one is going to succeed. Now, one more thing. This kind of helps you to see it a little bit here. All right? Because when we compare this to the view of Daniel, all right, we've got the Egyptians, the Assyrian, the Babylonian kingdom, and the Medes and Persians, and then Greece, and then there's Rome, and then Christ came, and then there is the final revived Rome. Now, when you look at the details, the kingdoms that Daniel saw, Daniel does not look backwards. He starts with the kingdom that was in power in his day, and the power that was in kingdom at that day was Babylon. He looks forward, and he talks about those four beasts. He describes Babylon, the head of gold. He describes Medo-Persia as the arms and chest of silver. He describes Greece as the thigh of bronze, and he describes Rome as the iron legs. And then he says, later on, there's going to be another kingdom. And John is looking backwards, and he sees them comprehensively. So Daniel's looking forward, John is looking back, and he sees the entire picture there. So I don't know if that helps you to see that, but there we have him right here, and he's telling us what these four kingdoms are, these seven world kingdoms. Now, the beast in chapter, verses 9 through 14, we'll pick up in verse 11. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the eighth, and is of the seven, and goeth into perdition. What do you mean he's of the seven? He is from the humanity, and he is the roots of these other beasts. It's all humanity. And so he comes from them, and it's concise. It's very brief, 1 hour. It's a composite of the seven, and he is controlling. He dominates the whole world. That's what's going to happen in the Antichrist kingdom. And he's very contrary. He's going to stand in rebellion to God's kingdom. And then he's going to be condemned. God will destroy him. He'll be overcome by the Lamb. In verse 13, verse 10, 12, and the 10 horns which thou sawest are 10 kings who have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. 1 hour, that's that hour that God promised the church at Philadelphia, I will keep you from that hour of temptation and tribulation that's coming on the whole world to try them. That 1 hour is when these kings are going to give their power to the beast. And in verse 13, they have one mind and shall give their power and their strength unto the beast. Verse 14, they will make war with the Lamb, and the Lamb shall overcome them, for he is the Lord of lords and the King of kings, and they that are with him are called and chosen and faithful. So there, and it goes on to talk about that and up to the conclusion. I think I gave you everything in the notes there for that with the rest of that chapter. Is that true? Got the woman, controls the masses, hated by the kings, betrayed by the kings. All right. Three references to the mind. There's a perceptive mind in verse 9. Did I give that to you? All right, there's the puppet mind that give their power to the beast, and then there's the powerless mind that they won't be able to do anything with it. All right, so let's conclude then. I think I gave you a couple more charts there, and I don't have those in my notes here. So judgment day for Babylon, okay? I wish I could spend a lot of time on this, but I'm just going to tell you, these are some of the views that people have given through the years. It's Rome, it's Jerusalem, it's New York City, it's the United States, it's ancient Babylon rebuilt. Here, whatever the case is, in chapter 18, it describes this city being completely destroyed. What I believe it is number 7 there, the final world empire of Antichrist. And I don't have a lot of time to give that to you, but if you want further information on that, I'll be glad to give you my full notes. I've let's go on to Babylon's identity, the difficulties. It appears to be a literal city. There's significant emphasis on merchandise. It seems to be a seaport, but there's no comparable city today. Nothing that even comes close to what he's describing here. And so what it does describe, it seems to be like a composite of many different cities. New York City is probably still the number one city in the world, followed by London and then several others too. All right, then Babylon's indictment. Did I give any blanks here? You got filled in everything? That's what I thought. I was afraid I wouldn't get through here. So you've got it. And I just want you to take your time and look through that. The angel indicts him. There's an announcement. There's annihilation. It is swift. It is severe. It is strong. And Babylon's iniquities are detailed. Their imagery, immensity. It is really immense. Inversion. They just turn away and they're intoxicated with evil. And the believer's imperative, come out from among her. Come out from among her. Don't you dare stay in there, because it is it's a terrible thing. So, Babylon's great fall. So I'm glad you got all those notes. Let me just do this in closing here. I'm already over time. Most of you were alive and kicking and remember where you were on 9/11. And when 9/11 took place, that is probably the closest thing for all of us to understand what it's going to be like when this final judgment takes place. The whole world is just totally is brought to a stop. It didn't just happen locally in America. It happened in the entire world. People, my mother-in-law was in Soviet Russia when that happened. She said people were coming up to her in stores in shock and weeping with her. She didn't even know what happened, but they had already found out. It was like a shock to the entire planet. It could happen to New York City and Washington, D.C. God knows what's coming, and he's told us what's coming, and we have been seeing some pictures, little harbingers of what it's going to be like. And let's be ready.